What a weekend we just had in the NFL. I mean, this might have been one of the better weekends in the NFL all year. Damn near every game yesterday came down to the final possession. We usually do our What's Real, What's Fake segment on Tuesdays, but since I'm off work this week, I decided to go ahead and get into it today. I'm actually off work for 4 of the last 6 weeks of the year, so you guys are probably going to be getting more content from me over the next month or so. We uploaded 2 videos on Friday, so I'm going to be cranking out as much content as possible over this next 4 to 6 weeks of the year. We're going to get into what's real, what's fake from this past weekend in just a second. I wanted to start out today with my New Orleans Saints. Sean Payton made the controversial decision to start Taysom Hill instead of Jameis Winston on Sunday against Atlanta. We discussed this on Friday. I didn't like the decision. I didn't agree with it. Matter of fact, most people didn't agree with Sean Payton's decision. It was a risky move on his part, going with an unproven Taysom Hill when you've got a veteran and Jameis Winston just collecting dust on the sidelines, not to mention the fact that the Saints are in the middle of a playoff chase. I still don't know if Taysom Hill's the answer long term, but as of right now, Sean Payton was right. Taysom Hill was phenomenal on Sunday. It started off a bit shaky. The first half, the Saints' offense was discombobulated. But that wasn't all on Taysom Hill. I thought Taysom Hill played well in the first half. I mean, he just wasn't getting any help. Michael Thomas dropped an easy pass in the red zone that would have resulted in a Saints first down. Alvin Kamara dropped a screen pass. The play calling early on, I thought, was questionable. It seemed that Sean Payton was bound and determined to prove to everyone that Taysom Hill was a competent passer in the pocket. It took a while for the Saints to get going, but once they did, it was over. The drive of the game and the turning point for the Saints was the opening drive of the second half. That drive was the first time that the offense was in rhythm, and it established a rhythm. And New Orleans kept that rhythm throughout the rest of the game. I told you guys Friday that the accuracy from Taysom Hill was going to be the key. If he struggled throwing the ball downfield or throwing the ball accurately out of the pocket, the Saints were screwed. Because Sean Payton's offense is all about timing and accuracy. He expects his quarterback to have the ball out of his hands on its way to the receiver before the receiver even makes their break on their route. Well, Taysom Hill, he passed that test with flying colors. He was Drew Brees level accurate, completing 78% of his passes. One of my other concerns with Taysom Hill was whether he was going to default to the run in most situations. It was clear to me early on that he had a pass-first mentality. There were several instances where he rolled out of the pocket, everyone's covered down the field, and it seemed like he was hesitating whether he should go ahead and run it or look for an open receiver or a receiver to get open. A quarterback hesitating is a death sentence. Usually results in a sack, and it happened a couple of times to Taysom Hill on Sunday. But that is just inexperience. And as the game went on and his confidence grew, we saw less and less hesitation out of Taysom Hill. He was pretty much flawless through 4 quarters. He had that one fumble in the 4th quarter, but that was kind of inconsequential. Other than that fumble, Taysom Hill was flawless. Now, I'm not ready to commit to him long-term after just one good game. I'm interested to see what happens once defenses have tape on him and they kind of figure out how to defend him. I'm interested to see how Taysom Hill responds. Lamar Jackson was unstoppable last season because defenses didn't know how to defend against him. Once the Titans shut him down in the playoffs, other teams copied that formula. Now, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens are struggling offensively. We'll get to them more here in just a second. I told you guys after week 1 that the Saints were the best team in the NFC. Most of you disagreed with me. Even fellow Saints fans didn't agree with me on that. Are any of you disagreeing with that take now? The Saints are the best team in the NFC. The key right now in New Orleans is the defense. In my opinion, this is the best defense in the league, damn sure the best defense in New Orleans since the Dome Patrol days of the 90s. They have so many guys who can rush the passer. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, Cam Jordan, DeMario Davis, Trey Hendrickson. Trey Hendrickson is quietly having an all-pro season. They were in Matt Ryan's face all day. 8 sacks. And when they weren't sacking him, they were hitting him. They never allowed Atlanta to get into any type of rhythm offensively. They didn't let him in the end zone once. Held the Falcons to 0 points in the second half. Midway through the fourth quarter, Atlanta had -4 yards of offense in the second half. That is just unbelievable. Statistically, New Orleans has the #1 defense in the NFL the past 6 weeks. The last 3 weeks, they have clearly been the best defense in the league. The Saints have given up just 25 points combined over the last 3 weeks. Two of those 3 games were against Tom Brady and Matt Ryan, who are leading 2 of the top offenses in the NFL. The Saints' defense was roundly criticized early in the season, but I told you guys that there was no need for panic. For some reason, the defense in New Orleans every year gets off to a slow start. I don't know why, but they do. It wasn't that the Saints' defense was playing bad early in the season. They were just giving up big plays. That has been kept to a minimum the last 6-7 weeks. And they haven't given up any big plays for touchdowns the last 3 weeks. Clearly, the Saints are the best team in the NFC right now. But you could actually make a strong case that they're the best team in the NFL. I know the Steelers are undefeated. I know the Chiefs are the defending champs. In my eyes, though, New Orleans is the most complete team and the clear favorite to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. All right, let's get into what's real, what's fake from this past weekend. And for those of you that are new subscribers, what we do here every Tuesday, Monday this week, but we normally do it on Tuesdays, is we take headlines from the past weekend and we determine what's real or what we agree with or what's fake, maybe an overreaction to something or just an outright lie. First up this week, Brian Flores benching Tua was the wrong move. Real. I got this one from The Ringer. Last month, when Brian Flores made the decision to bench a red-hot Ryan Fitzpatrick for Tua, I told you guys I didn't like the move. I received a lot of dislikes on that video and some pushback in the comments section. Some of you guys even emailed me making the case why going with Tua was the right decision. He went 3-0 his first 3 games, but lost in that winning streak was the fact that he really wasn't playing all that well. Miami's defense won the game against the Rams, forcing 4 turnovers. They won the game against the Chargers, holding Justin Herbert to just 170 yards passing and the Chargers' offense to just 273 total yards. Tua struggled in both of those games. Now, to his credit, he played well against Arizona, but he struggled in his other 2 starts. Then on Sunday against the Broncos, which to his defense, Denver is a tough place to play. It's not easy in Mile High for a veteran quarterback, much less a rookie. But for the 3rd time in 4 weeks, Tua struggled. And to say he struggled is an understatement because he was god-awful. Once again, the Dolphins' defense did their part. Now, they weren't great, but they kept Miami in the game. But it is damn near impossible to win when your quarterback is completing 55% of his passes and has just 83 yards through 3 quarters. Can't win that way. It was initially being reported that Brian Flores benched Tua because of an injury. Now, he did take a hard hit, but that wasn't the reason he was benched. Brian Flores benched him because he's underperformed 3 out of 4 weeks. But no worries. Brian Flores says, Tua's our guy. He's going to start for us on Sunday. We're confident in him. I like Brian Flores. Think he's a great coach. Think he has the Dolphins heading in the right direction. But this is precisely why I thought it was a bad decision to bench Ryan Fitzpatrick. Miami is in the middle of a playoff hunt in the AFC. They even have a chance to win the AFC East. Just like I said a month ago, because Fitzpatrick was having a career year, if you make the decision to go with Tua, you better damn well be sure it's going to work out. Because if he plays poorly and the veterans on this team start whispering, start talking about missing out on their chance at the playoffs because of their rookie quarterback, then you risk splitting your locker room. However, Brian Flores made the decision, so you've got to stand by it. Benching Tua on Sunday afternoon sends the wrong message on multiple fronts. It sends the wrong message to Tua, potentially kills any confidence that he had. Sends a message that your head coach is losing confidence in you, doesn't have faith in you. It also sends the wrong message to the team. If the coach is questioning his rookie quarterback, what do you think the veteran players are thinking? Not only did you bench him, then you come out and state that he's going to be the starter going forward. It just doesn't make any sense. Once you make the decision to bench the veteran quarterback for your future, your rookie, you sign up for the ups and downs, because there are going to be more downs than ups, in most cases anyway, unless your name is Patrick Mahomes. Brian Flores treating Tua like a yo-yo, it doesn't do anyone any favors, because what happens going forward? The Dolphins have the Jets and the Bengals the next 2 weeks. Should be good confidence builders for Tua. But what happens if he struggles? Will Brian Flores bench him again for Ryan Fitzpatrick? One of the reasons I disagreed with going with Tua was this scenario right here. You start him week one next season, sitting at 0-0, there isn't as much pressure. Deciding to start him with your team contending for the playoffs, it's just unnecessary added pressure to your rookie quarterback. The decision to bench Tua Sunday was a horrible, horrible mistake by Brian Flores. You made your bed, dude. You made the call to start your future now. In the middle of the playoff chase, you've got to live with it. All right, next up. The Colts' comeback win affirms spot in Super Bowl conversation. Fake. I got this one from FanSided, and this is really a question of, are Phillip Rivers and the Indianapolis Colts contenders or pretenders? Colts fans out there aren't going to like this, but Indianapolis is a pretender. I'm not saying they won't make the playoffs. What I'm saying is, the Colts are not a Super Bowl contender. There's a difference. Hell, the Cleveland Browns are looking to make the playoffs. Does anyone think they have a chance at making it to the Super Bowl? I thought about getting into Baker Mayfield and the Browns today, but I think I'm going to make a separate video on it tomorrow. I've got a whole lot to say right now about Baker Mayfield. Anyway, let's get back to Phillip Rivers and the Colts being pretenders. Look, I understand statistically that the Colts have the number one defense in the NFL. I understand that Phillip Rivers has been on fire in the month of November, outside of that one game against Baltimore. I understand fans of the Indianapolis Colts are all excited. This is our year. We just beat Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. We came back from down double digits. We've won four of the last five games. I have seen this movie before, and I know how it ends. Why do I believe the Indianapolis Colts are pretenders? Because Phillip Rivers is their quarterback, and he has made a career of being a pretender. What's going on right now in Indianapolis is an illusion. It's not real. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but the collapse is coming. Phillip Rivers is kind of like a Ponzi scheme. Man, it looks really good on paper. Even sounds great when you're sold on the idea. But eventually the pyramid falls. It happens every time. That is the career of Phillip Rivers in a nutshell. If you don't believe me, ask anyone that's a fan of the Chargers. They witnessed it firsthand for 15, 16 years. There are two quarterbacks in the NFL that I feel find creative ways to lose games. Matt Stafford, Phillip Rivers. The truth is, when the lights are bright and the pressure is on in the playoffs, Phillip Rivers consistently folds. Happened 2007, 2008 in New England, 2009 in Pittsburgh. He was god-awful in the 2019 divisional round against the Patriots a couple of years ago. Phillip Rivers, for his career, he's got a quarterback rating of 95.1 during the regular season. Completes 65% of his passes. Career record, 130-104. But in the playoffs, his quarterback rating drops to 84.2. He completes 59% of his passes. Record of 5-6. With that being the case, why the hell would I believe it? 39 years old. Phillip Rivers turns 39 here in a couple of weeks. Why in the hell would I believe at 39 years old, well past his prime, with a career of disappointment in the playoffs, why would I believe that suddenly this is going to be the year that Phillip Rivers turns everything around? Why would I believe that? I'm not buying it. I'm just not buying it. The Colts have a brutal stretch to close out the season. They could sweep it, go 6-0, end the season 13-3. I'm still not buying Indianapolis as a Super Bowl contender. Because like I said, I have seen this movie with Phillip Rivers before. I already know the ending. All right, next up. It is time for the Eagles to bench Carson Wentz. Fake. Now, I got this one from everywhere. Take your pick. You can find numerous articles saying that it is time to bench Carson Wentz in Philadelphia. And this one's really hard. I got to admit, this one's really hard. But my God, has Carson Wentz been a disaster this year. He leads the league in interceptions. After he threw another interception on Sunday in the second quarter, they showed him walking off the field, and you could just see it on his face. You could see it in his eyes. It was this look of, here we go again. Nothing has gone right for Carson Wentz this year. Career low completion percentage. He has tied a career high in interceptions, and they still have 6 games left to play. His 48.1 quarterback rating is a career low and is inexcusable, to be honest with you, with the kind of money that the Eagles are paying him. I get that the Eagles are banged up, again, just like they were last year, but I'm not using that excuse for Carson Wentz anymore. One of the main problems right now is Carson Wentz is playing with zero confidence. He is playing scared, playing not to lose instead of playing to win. Prime example of this, early second quarter on Sunday, he has got a receiver wide open down the field, and Carson Wentz sees him, yet he checks down to his running back instead. When you have a quarter hesitating like that, hesitant to throw the ball down the field, you've got one hell of a problem. But benching him for Jalen Hurts is not the solution. That's just going to make things worse. Look, when the Eagles gave Carson Wentz that massive contract extension and chose him over Nick Foles, they chose him for better or for worse. It's almost like a marriage. He saved your season last year, carried a roster of practice squad players to the playoffs. And he could do it again this year. The Eagles, they're in the driver's seat in the NFC East. 3-6-1. I know it's crazy to say they control their own destiny, but they do. I don't think Jalen Hurts is ready. If he was, I think Doug Peterson would have benched Carson Wentz already and started Jalen Hurts. So benching Carson Wentz at this point for Hurts, just because there's fan and media pressure, that's not going to solve anything. I believe that a lot of the problem right now with Carson Wentz is all mental. Doug Peterson is going to have to figure something out. I don't know what the hell it is. Maybe have him see a sports psychiatrist. Who the hell knows? But I do know that benching Carson Wentz at this point isn't going to solve anything. All right, last up. It is time to be concerned with the Baltimore Ravens. Real. Got this from ESPN. The alarm bells are ringing loud right now in Baltimore. The Ravens are in trouble. They've lost 3 of their last 4 games. They're 1-4 against teams with a winning record. And more importantly, once again on Sunday, Lamar Jackson was terrible. Lamar Jackson hasn't had a game with a quarterback rating above 100 since week 4. Now, in that stretch of 6 games, the Ravens are 3-3. 2 of the 3 wins were against the Eagles and the Bengals. The number one rushing attack in the NFL has been outgained on the ground 3 weeks in a row. And the biggest problem is, the solution to the Ravens' problem isn't going to be found this season. It is the same solution, the same thing that I've been talking about since last year when Baltimore was 14-2. The Ravens are going to continue to struggle until Lamar Jackson becomes a proficient pocket passer. It is just that simple. I can't make it any more clear. And Lamar Jackson, he's not going to become a proficient pocket passer over the next 6 weeks. Not going to happen. The division at this point is gone. You can kiss it goodbye. Pittsburgh, 10-0, has a 4-game lead over Baltimore. Hell, the Browns are leading Baltimore in the division right now. It seems after every loss lately that we're hearing something new from Lamar Jackson. After the loss to New England, the Ravens locker room was pissed off. After Sunday's loss to the Titans, it was Tennessee wanted it more. What is it going to be after they lose to the Steelers on Thursday night? Oh, we were full from Thanksgiving. We were playing with hurt stomachs. The Ravens have the third best defense in the NFL. Yet, in games where they lead a team by 10 or more points, they're 1-2. Why is that? Because the offense becomes stagnant. Case in point, Sunday's game against the Titans. Opening drive of the second half, Lamar Jackson leads them down the field for a touchdown. After that, he threw for just 85 yards, and the Titans outscored Baltimore 20-3. Lamar Jackson's style of play is not sustainable. Defenses have figured out the formula to stop him. He averaged over 80 yards a game on the ground last year, 5 games with over 100 yards rushing. This season, he's averaging 57. Defenses are containing him in the pocket and making Lamar Jackson try to beat them through the air, and he just can't do it. So when you have a quarterback that struggles throwing the football consistently accurate, I would say that it's time to panic. It is time to panic in Baltimore. Their only saving grace at this point is the schedule. The Ravens have a soft schedule to close the season after their game Thursday against the Steelers. After that, they've got the Cowboys, the Browns, the Jags, the Giants, and the Bengals. That's 5 very winnable games, which would get them to 11-5 in a wild card spot. Before the season, though, there were pundits talking about the possibility of the Ravens actually running the table, going 16-0, making the Super Bowl. That dream is over. More than likely, Baltimore's looking at a third straight opening round playoff loss. All right, that's all for today. Hit that like and subscribe button. Click the notification bell to receive all notifications from the channel. Leave me a comment in the section below. Tell me where I'm wrong. If the Saints aren't the best team in the NFC, tell me who is. Is it time to panic for the Ravens? Should the Eagles bench Carson Wentz for Jalen Hurts? Are the Colts Super Bowl contenders? Let me know your thoughts. You can follow me on Twitter at KC_BTL84. And though, to be honest with you, I hardly use Twitter anymore. Best way to contact me is by email at btlkc84@gmail.com. If you have questions, comments, a topic that you would like me to cover, shoot me an email. I'll see you guys next time.